But first, Ben Marcus. His most recent collection is called Leaving the Sea, and he also just edited an anthology called New American Stories. When Steve Paulson talked with him, he asked him to begin with a bit from the introduction.
Language is a drug, but a short story cannot be smoked. You can't inject it. Stories don't come bottled as a cream. You cannot have a story massaged into you by a bearish old man. You have to stare down a story until it wobbles, yields, then catapults into your face. But as squirrely as they are to capture, stories are the ideal deranger. If they are well made and you submit to them, they go in clean. Stories deliver their chemical disruption without the ashy hangover, the blacking out, the poison. They trigger pleasure, fear, fascination, love, confusion, desire, repulsion. Drugs get flushed from our systems, but not the best stories. Once they take hold, you couldn't scrape them out with a knife. While working on this book, I started to think of it as a medicine chest filled with beguiling, volatile material designed by the most gifted technicians. The potent story writers, to me, are the ones who deploy language as a kind of contraband, pumping it into us until we collapse on the floor, writhing, overwhelmed with feeling. Imagine trying to assert the importance of water, food, love, the company of others, shelter. There are some things that we need so innately that it feels awkward and difficult to explain why. To this list of crucial things without which we might perish, I would add stories. A short story works to remind us that if we are not sometimes baffled and amazed and undone by the world around us, rendered speechless and stunned, perhaps we are not paying close enough attention.
Ah, that is wonderful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I love that image of language as a drug. Where did that idea come from?
I don't really know. I think I was trying to wrestle with this question of what it feels like to read. And I think back to being a kid, staying inside on a nice day on the weekend and getting completely consumed by a book, absorbed by it, engrossed, just taken over, and putting the book down and realizing the world was changed for me. My parents looked different. My friends looked different. My house looked different. In other words, I was kind of intoxicated. My brain had been shifted around. And so I think when I started to think of it that way and started to pay attention to what the most beautiful, intense, compelling, gripping, entertaining stories did to me, it wasn't such a stretch to think, you know, it's like taking a drug. You're different after. You're altered.
So we've been talking about the power of language in great literature. What about specifically short stories? I mean, at one point you describe them as strategies in language to attack our tendency to feel too little.
Yeah, well, the short story seems to have a lot of pressure on it, a kind of gun at its back. There's a suspicion around stories. They are open to a kind of light ridicule up against the novel. And the story seems to kind of possess or seems to want to possess a kind of urgency so that within a sentence, within two sentences, whatever you were doing, you know, cleaning your house or watching TV, the story has to kind of compete against all that and grab you and not let you go. And it seems we're a lot more patient with novels. We sort of understand we might need to wade through 20 pages of description about how some characters met and where they went to school and the kinds of storytelling armature, background, exposition that can define great and beautiful novels. And I think I'm attracted to stories because they really don't have a sentence to spare. It seems that we're looking for reasons not to read them. And that that's a really interesting challenge that I think story writers are meeting really, really beautifully.
So what were you looking for when you put together this? And well, you don't like the word anthology, but I don't know what else you'd call it.
Do I not?
The selection of short stories.
I was looking for just that, the experience of not wanting to stop reading. I was so lucky to be able to put this book together because I could gather hundreds of short story collections, literary magazines, individual printouts of stories that I'd heard about or that people had recommended to me. I could just make huge piles around myself and read and read and read and read. And in some ways, it was nice to not really know what I was looking for other than a kind of unforgettable experience. So if, for instance, I read something and picked it up a few days later and couldn't remember it at all, that was sometimes a sign that it had failed to endure in me. Now, I don't mean that to be a definitive criticism of that story, but I think I was just looking for stories that had a kind of long half-life that kept with me, that I couldn't forget.
Well, let's take one example of this. The very first story in your collection called Paranoia, and I don't even know how you say the author's name. Can you say it for me?
Yeah. It's Saeed Seyraf Yezidah, a terrific writer who was completely new to me when I started this project. And it was always exciting to find a writer I'd never even heard of. And there were six or seven of his stories I felt could have gone in this book. And this Paranoia was the one I settled on.
So what was it about this story that appealed to you?
The story is simple and plain and very inviting and easy to get into, and it reveals its riches subtly and slowly, and it kind of builds a lot of enigma and strangeness. There's a war going on, and we think we might know which war it is, but as we move through the story, we find we know less and less. And I think that Saeed, one of the many exciting things he does as a writer is, I guess the old-fashioned term for this would be defamiliarization, where he takes things that look familiar to us and kind of common, and he almost sort of applies a kind of wobble to them so that the world we think we know starts to quiver a little bit, but that helps us see and feel things behind the familiar that have gotten hidden because we think we know what there is to know about them.
Hmm. Well, could you give us a taste of this? Maybe read the first couple of paragraphs?
Sure. This is a story called Paranoia by Saeed Seyraf Yezidah. When April arrived, it started to get warm and everyone said that the war was definitely going to happen soon and there was nothing anybody could do to stop it. The diplomats were flying home, the flags were coming out, and the call-ups were about to begin. Walking across the bridge, I would sometimes see freight trains lumbering by, loaded top to bottom with tanks or jeeps, once even the wings of airplanes heading out west or down south. Some line had been crossed, something said or done, something irrevocable on our side or on the enemy's, from which there was no longer any possibility of turning back. I hadn't been following matters that closely, so I had missed exactly when things had taken a turn. Nevertheless, everyone was saying that the war was going to happen soon, and so I said it, too. Then May came, and it got hot, and Roberto broke his nose and asked me if I would come visit him in the hospital. Blood everywhere, he told me over the phone. Apparently, he'd been lifting weights at the gym when one of his buddies, in order to emphasize some conversational point he was making, fainted like a boxer and swung at Roberto's face. The buddy had meant merely to pantomime the punch, but with his arms heavy light from having just bench-pressed 300 pounds, he'd lost the ability to gauge distance, strength, or speed, and he cracked Roberto right in the nose. I wanted to question the details of the story because Roberto was subject to hyperbole, and also because I was selfish and didn't want to make the trip across town, but I was the closest thing to family that Roberto had, and on the telephone he did sound like he had a sock stuffed down his throat and up his nose.
Yeah, that's such a great setup. I mean, so suggestive about things to come. I mean, for one thing, the sense of a lot of power, of might, of violence that can't even quite be controlled.
There's something really ominous. And one of the things I like so much is that you get the sense that the narrator doesn't even really know what's happening. He says that, you know, war was apparently coming. He wasn't really following it. Other people were saying war was coming, so he said it too. And these things are, they're kind of, there's this instability to that that as a reader, I think I really am attracted to. You know, it's just not clear what's factual. And yet you could also just believe it. So there's all this room inside these seemingly innocent statements. But then, of course, it just gets specific. It's, you know, first there's, you know, a war is coming, but then, his friend gets a bloody nose. So we're moving all over the place there. And I think it becomes quickly clear that we really don't know where this is or when this is or what the rules are exactly. And yet, I think with a writer this good, or for me anyway, I just trust him. I feel, well, I'm going to read whatever he writes. I'm just going to follow this because someone's in charge, even if he's not really revealing the details.
Ben Marcus is a novelist, short story writer, and the editor of the anthology New American Stories. He talked with Steve Paulson.